team off the rope.
I don't know what happened, but it was one of the most bipolar efforts I've ever seen from a player to that level of eliteness. New word, just go with it. Get him.
So if you put in Joe Schmo, average guy, journeyman quarterback, the Cowboys threw, there's only been three games, bruh. Three games. He's already 200 yards below the average quarterback.
I'm pissed off.
Bruh, are y'all paying attention? This dude has the yips. He's had the yips since the Atlanta game. He hasn't recovered.
This is an offense that's already been struggling. It's already been regressive, okay? And then Scott Linehan removes himself from the sidelines completely, puts himself up in the booth because I guess he needs a better vantage point on how bad his play calling actually looks.
Other people that are on the list for Catch This Fade, they are multiple offenders. They are guys that, like, are on second and third strike. Like, the federal judge is looking at them like, sir, you're going to need to sit down for a long time off of these charges. Zeke is one of those guys that he gets a slap on the wrist. Dude, what are you doing? Go do community service or something.
All right. You are now rocking with the best, and thank you so much for tuning in to another exciting, exhilarating, and awesome episode of Catch This Fade Podcast. I am, of course, your host, KD Drummond. Follow me on Twitter at KD Drummond NFL. That is my man, Five Grand, co-host Patrick Walker. Say what's up to the people, Pat.
I'm pissed off.
Yeah, of course you're pissed off. You saw the game last Sunday.
That's what's up with Patrick Walker. I'm pissed off, and now I'm so mad I'm speaking in third person.
Listen, we're going to do something this week that we don't normally do. Normally, we try to, you know, mix the good in with the bad, have a little bit of an even keel show. And while things are not absolutely completely out of whack with the Dallas Cowboys, they damn sure are close, and they're going to have to catch this fade for the entire episode.
The entire episode. I mean, there's so much fade to pass around. We actually had to kind of go through a cut list, like a final roster cut,
yeah,
to see who was more qualifying of the fade that's coming. So that's just how poorly they played in week three against the Seattle Seahawks. There was definite positives. Obviously, you know, you got players like DeMarcus Lawrence and some Jones. Of those guys along the line. And you know, Byron Jones, absolutely. Another week, another stellar 60 minutes of football for Byron Jones. He's, you know, the shutdown corner that myself and KD and several of our other smart football colleagues kind of alluded to him becoming and projected that he'd become now that he plays the cornerback position
for.
Yeah, and so finally he's there, and that move of Byron Jones combined with who moved him being Chris Richard, that marriage is fantastic. So yep, there are definite positives that we saw, but there was so many negatives that we gotta attack it, and they've got to catch what we're about to throw, man.
I'm gonna let you have the floor first. So in the words of the prestigious and much respected Red Man and Method Man, get them.
Oh, first and foremost, ladies and gentlemen, it hurts me to my heart to do it, but I wouldn't be a real objective analyst if I didn't put this out there. Ezekiel Elliott,
get him.
Bring your ass here, boy. love you to death, man. You are the motor that gets and keeps this offense going. They haven't utilized you like they should have up to this point. You had finally had a great game in the young season, struggled against the Carolina Panthers, struggled against the New York Giants, and voila, pretty much right on schedule. If you look at the previous couple of years with Ezekiel Elliott, he tends to break out in that third game. And so he did, to the tune of 127 yards on the ground, even though he only had 17 touches. But that lets you know that's what, 7.9, almost 8 yards a carry. He was doing his job. You were doing your job, Zeke, and all was well until I don't know who you touched in the huddle, that what type of contagion they had that infected you for the rest of that game, but it was not pretty. The drop in the second quarter that could have been a first down conversion and a lot more because there was a lot of green. And that was one of the few accurate passes from Dak Prescott, and you didn't take advantage of it. On the very next play, 31-yard touchdown reception, or it should have been, but you lost your awareness and you stepped out of bounds before stepping back in and grabbing the catch. That is not legal, sir, in football. That is a penalty. Touching. Illegal touching. You cannot be the first guy to touch the football if you step out of bounds. That touchdown would have put the score at 7-7, KD, and then potentially made it a completely different dynamic for the remainder of the game. Instead, because that had to be wiped off the board, the Seahawks went on to score 17 points in the second quarter, and they never looked back. That being said, in the fourth quarter, the Cowboys, although it looked bleak and they really didn't have much of a chance, there was still a chance. So you're saying there's a chance? And there was. And there was. Until Ezekiel Elliott tears off a 27-yard run, his longest of not only the game, but of the season. Mm-hmm. And then he fails to switch the ball to his outside arm, allowing the defender to strip it. Recovery, Seattle. Nail in the coffin. Ezekiel Elliott, you are an all-pro running back. You rarely make a single mistake like any of the three that you made in Seattle. I don't know what happened, but it was one of the most bipolar efforts I've ever seen from a player that's to that level of eliteness. New word, just go with it. But you both helped the Cowboys stay in the game and helped cost them the game at the very same time, in the very same breath. So Ezekiel Elliott, I know you're better than that. You have been better than that. You will be better than that. I believe you'll have a bounce back game in a big way against a Detroit Lions team that can't stop snow from melting in Antarctica, right? But for right now, week three, Seattle Seahawks, Ezekiel Elliott, you have to catch this fade.
Absolutely, absolutely he has to catch this fade. There's no question about it. And I saw people trying to tell me that, well, not me, because they know better than to come to me with this garbage. But they tried to tell people on Twitter that he had, you know, the best game of his season, 127 yards, a 7.9. How could you possibly call that a bad game? You're trash if you think Ezekiel Elliott didn't have a bad game. You're a trash fan. I'm telling you right now, be offended. Hit me on Twitter. Let's talk it out. But you're a trash fan if you think that that was a good game just because of the yardage. There's so much more. And he actually did stump them from being able to get things going. What he did was so out of the ordinary for him, which is why I don't mind him going first. That's like really the main takeaway. Like other people that are on the list for catch this fade, they are multiple offenders. They are guys that like are on second and third strike. Like the federal judge is looking at them like, sir, you're going to need to sit down for a long time off of these charges. Zeke is one of those guys that he gets a slap on the wrist. Dude, what are you doing? Go do community service or something. That's his offense level. Because
not even probation. Just go do community service and let's pretend this never happened.
Yeah, give me 30 hours and then we'll work it out. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But the rest of these dudes on this list, especially the number two guy, quarterback Dak Prescott, son, multiple offenders that are violation that would absolutely cause anybody, if this was a court of law, you doing time, son. Because Dak Prescott, look,
get him.
All right, let's get him. Dak Prescott, you got to catch this fade, son. What was that? What was that performance that you just turned in on Sunday? What is this performance that you're turning in for the entire season? What's going on, bruh? Do you need a counselor? Do you need somebody to talk to? Do you want to vent? Everybody talks about – this is one of the things that pisses me off a little bit. Everybody in the Cowboys organization talks about how well Dak Prescott is at managing stress levels, and he's seen it all and all that kind of stuff. Bro, are y'all paying attention? This dude has the yips. He's had the yips since the Atlanta game. He hasn't recovered. Let's look at this stat real quick. This is one interesting stat that I found because, of course, at Cowboys Wire, shameless plug, we ran all the numbers. We showed how he was seeing ghosts over the offseason. When he gets pressured – he tends to feel pressure even when the pressure is no longer there. That means that he's rushing, he's making bad decisions, he's doing all of these things that basically a rookie quarterback should do, or should I say that basically a fourth-round quarterback can do. Maybe he's just revealing himself to be what he is. Now that there's no longer a perfect scenario around him, with he still has the top flight running back, the offensive line isn't what it used to be. There's no more security blanket in Jason Witten. There's no more star receiver that he can go to in crunch time and in clutch situations. All of that has now gone. That's what he had in 2016 when he set the world on fire and he had everybody feeling confident. Now, granted, most of us smart people still said, give the job back to Romo. I understand why they couldn't give the job back to Romo, because the dude just kept winning. You can't knock him. I mean, he won 11 games in a row. There was no way that you were going to be able to sit him down for Romo, knowing how fragile the Romo situation was. However, what we continue to see is somebody that has a lack of accuracy. He has an issue having to wait for receivers to get themselves open. In the NFL, you can't do that. You have to throw players open. And he has, over the last 2 1/3 year, shown that he is not capable of throwing receivers open. He holds on to the ball way too long. He feels phantom pressure. The biggest issue is that he doesn't have the self-confidence to take control of the offense. Now, look, brother, you're about to be out of a job in the NFL soon, if we're being honest. You're in danger zone right now. People,
big facts.
We might have been the first site to run it, but people have caught on this week. We ran quarterbacks to watch in the NFL draft, and now everybody's like, yeah, bro, we might need to go ahead and devote that first-round pick to a quarterback. You've watched the tape, Dak. You've seen how Romo changed the offense into a beast. We know that he was choosing one of multiple options that was given to him in the huddle. And no, you're not that experienced. I don't expect you to still be at the same level of what Romo was at the end of his career. That is an outrageous ask of anybody, to be at the level that Tony Romo was at the end of his career. You don't have the experience, but you do have your instincts. Forget everything they're telling you about not having to run to be a popular to be a positive quarterback. You can do this. You can go back to what you were at Mississippi State. Screw what they're telling you in the headpiece and on the huddle. They ain't gonna yank you for Cooper Rush. They're not gonna put Mike White in the game. Go run the ball. Do what makes you comfortable, and then you can possibly, before you get taken out of the game and before your career gets derailed because you're trying to be something that you're not, go be the person that you are and see if that works. And force them to take you out and say, okay, well, you tried it their way. It's obviously not working. Try it your way, and if it doesn't work, then at least you gave it a shot to what it was that brought you into the league. You're abandoning what made you you. And what you are right now isn't working. Listen to this stat right here. Football Outsiders has a stat called DYAR. It's defense adjusted yards above replacement. That means how well you're doing compared to a replacement level player, aka a jag. Dak Prescott has thrown for negative 205 yards compared to a replacement level quarterback. That's 30th in the league. So if you put in Joe Schmo, average guy, journeyman quarterback, the Cowboys threw, there's only been three games, bruh. Three games. He's already 200 yards below the average quarterback. Based on the exact same game situations and every single play, yardage, score, time of possession, all of those sorts of things, if you simply put a replacement player in for Dak Prescott on all of those passes, they would have gained 205 more yards than him. Bruh, you got it.
Ugly.
Listen, you have to catch this fade.
Every ounce of the fade, Mr. Prescott. Rain, let me talk to you, man to man, Rain. Okay. your NFL career is very much on the line, like my man KD here just so eloquently reminded you of. And right now, it's not cutting it. It's not cutting it. And I said this on my Twitter account at Voice of the Star, shameless plug. But prior to week two, after the loss in the season opener, I said Dak Prescott needs to run the ball. I specifically said, though, that he needs to turn off the earpiece in his headset and go full MSU. That was the quote. Go full MSU. He goes out against the Giants. He runs, you know, carries the ball 4 or 5 times, nearly 50 yards rushing. Voila, they win the game. Okay. The correlation cannot be ignored. They go back out in week 3. He doesn't register his first rushing attempt until the middle of the fourth quarter, when it was way too late. to get back in the game using your legs. The Seahawks didn't even care at that point, right? We're talking about a quarterback that over the past few games, let me rattle off these numbers to you. 212, 189, 179, 170, 160, 168. Those, ladies and gentlemen, are Dak Prescott's passing yardage per game. And the math there is 151.7 yards per game that he's averaging as a quarterback. There are running backs in the league that are capable of rushing for 152 yards in a game, but Prescott is having trouble throwing for that amount. He has three passing touchdowns only in the last six regular season games, but he has six interceptions, 50% INT ratio. Dak Prescott, we have been forgiving because you are young. And like you said, KD, we don't expect him to play like Romo on the back end of his career when he was available. We don't expect Drew Brees or Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady. That's not what we expect. That you shouldn't expect it from yourself. However, your coaching staff expects it. You're going to have to make a decision if you want to remain an NFL quarterback. And that's whether it be with the Dallas Cowboys as a starter or if you end up getting a fresh start somewhere else on your second contract, which is quite possible, especially based on what we're seeing right now. Okay?
Look, I have an idea. I know somebody that can help Dak Prescott.
Who's that?
Not Kellen Moore.
Listen, you want me to go ahead and go there?
That's
fine. Dak Prescott, the fade you caught, admittedly, a lot of it is on you. Everything we laid out is on you. But the part that's not on you is there are people around you that are being paid to put you in positions to succeed, and they are simply failing. One of those individuals is Kellen Moore. So, Kellen, you have to. I just need a word, sir. Kellen Moore was an absolute failure at the NFL level as a player. An absolute failure. I don't mean he gave it his best shot and he had some ups and downs, or, you know, he had the Fitzpatrick arc where some days he was, you know, fantastic for stretches of time, several games at a time, and then he was the worst quarterback ever, and then he was in the middle, and then he went back up. And no, we didn't even get that kind of roller coaster ride from Kellen Moore. He came into the league via the Detroit Lions in 2012. And from 2012 to him finally being pushed into retirement, because he didn't retire on his own. Like, he was coaxed into retiring. And even then, it was because they offered him the quarterback coaching position. As a player, 0-2. That's his win-loss record, 0-2. Mm-hmm.
You have failed this city.
779 total yards from 2012 to through 2017. Four touchdowns, six interceptions. Now, absorb how bad that is, and then I want you to extrapolate for the fact that 435 of those yards came in one game against the Water Boys for the Washington Redskins at the back end of the 2016 season. Three of those four touchdowns came in that very game, which means going into that game, he had just about 350 career passing yards and only one career passing touchdown. Subsequent to that, or I should say concurrent to all of that, here comes the 2016 season. Right, 2017 season, I should say. They go out and they select, or I should say they sign Cooper Rush, undrafted rookie free agent. Okay. You got Cooper Rush, he comes in, not a draft pick, beat you out of your job, Kellen Moore. Beat you out of your job. Force you into another release. You have several releases over the course of your stint with the Cowboys. Only reason you're here is because, I don't know, maybe you're the ill-begotten son of Scott Linehan, but we'll get to that later in the show. Kellen Moore gets the nod to be the quarterback coach for a now third-year quarterback going into the most pivotal year of his career. And what have we seen from you, Kellen Moore? We heard the media addressing when you said, oh, well, you're ready for the job. And yes, we heard Jason Garrett prop you up, and we heard Scott Linehan obviously prop you up. And, you know, your football IQ is absolutely fantastic. And we don't disagree. Your football IQ is probably absolutely fantastic. But just because you know a lot doesn't mean you can do a lot. And just because you know a lot doesn't mean you can teach at all. Okay. So what we're going to go ahead and do is see exactly how bad things have gotten, because you're now looking at the Cowboys had a lot of pre-draft love from Mike White. Okay. The Mike White that we saw for the majority of the preseason, that didn't look good at all. He started to come on strong in the end, but that didn't look good as far as his total body of preseason work. You look at Cooper Rush, who basically is now a shell of what we saw in the preseason preceding the 2017 regular season, when he was just basically lighting it up, right? And then, you know, you can stop there for a second and say, oh, well, maybe it's just them and maybe it's not Kellen Moore. Okay, well, I just gave you two quarterbacks. Now let me give you the third, and the third happens to be the franchise quarterback who was – granted, he had some struggles in 2017, but he was putting up MVP caliber numbers over the first half of the season. He got the injury to Tyron Smith, and then he went and got the yips, right? So what do? You should bring in a veteran quarterback coach to get him over that, rebuild his confidence, so forth and so on. However, they went with you, Kellen. You sold them on the fact that you could do the job. And see, this is why you're catching the fade, because you should not have accepted a position to do something that you could not do. Although I should kind of throw the fade at myself for even assuming that he would have the gumption to step up and say, you know what, I'm not qualified to do this job. Because if that was the case, he would have walked away from trying to be an NFL quarterback years ago. So I guess if you can't walk away from that, then you're not going to walk away from somebody offering you money to be a coach, even though you know in your heart of hearts you're not qualified to coach anybody. And then on top of that, to a lesser but still a pertinent degree, and you know, this would be interesting, KD, and this is something that we could probably look up after the show and just kind of, you know, throw it out there on Twitter and see if this stat is interesting enough. I want to know what the success rate is on a left-handed quarterback trying to coach up right-handed quarterbacks.
Oh, I can tell you right now what the success is so far. It's 1-2, because Kellen Moore is the only left-handed quarterback coach in the NFL right now. Just like he was the only left-handed quarterback in the NFL last year. It makes absolutely no sense for the Cowboys to put the fate of Dak Prescott into Kellen Moore's hands. It's absolutely mind-boggling that they said, hey, this quarterback who performed down the stretch like he didn't belong, and we're going to still try to prop up and give him the job and keep him in the driver's seat of this position, the best thing that we can do for this dude is to make Kellen Moore the only voice in his ear. And not only did they make Kellen Moore the only voice in his ear, Scott Linehan went to the booth. Right. And Dak Prescott does not talk directly to Scott Linehan during the game. He goes through Kellen Moore.
Right.
What? I'm trying not to cuss. Look, ladies and gentlemen, Pat and I had a conversation before we started this show. We asked ourselves, do we go ahead and put the explicit content tag on this episode? Because there are some things that are going to drive us to cursing. Ugh. This is one of those things, and I'm trying my best not to. Bruh.
Don't do it.
Bruh.
Don't do it. I get it. Because
okay.
I'm at a loss for words, dude. Because listen.
Look, that never happens. His name is Voice of the Star. He's never at a loss for words. Kellen Moore has done that to him.
This is an offense that's already been struggling. It's already been regressive, okay? And then you move, or I should say Scott Linehan removes himself from the sidelines completely, puts himself up in the booth because I guess he needs a better vantage point on how bad his play calling actually looks. Not that he'll change it, but, you know, he just wants to see how it looks from a different angle. But it's still bad no matter how, you know, you lick the ice cream. It's
can't put lipstick on a pig.
Right, exactly. So – and now you ask Kellen Moore, on top of everything that I just faded him for, you are asking him to be the sole voice that speaks to Dak Prescott, gets the plays in, communicates, and is the conduit to getting those plays into Dak Prescott on the field. And also, what makes that even worse, what makes that much worse, earlier in the season, I believe it was Week one, we saw them get a delay of game. And then we're like, well, what happened there? And then that's how we ended up finding out, because we did some digging and we were like, wait. So plays have to go through Kellen Moore?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this offense, number one, it doesn't even move well if it's not in a hurry up, a rapid pace. Okay, so now you're going to slow the pace all the way down to the point where you're probably getting – Dak Prescott is probably now getting the call and then relaying it to the team with under 10 seconds left on the clock. Okay, that's a lot of pressure for a guy who already wants to be perfect in the eyes of his offensive coordinator and head coach, meaning he's not going to make any pre-snap adjustments, or I should say very little, but you're not even giving him a chance to be able to do that, because once the plays come in, if they give him three options, right, he has the, 11 seconds left for everybody to line up?
let me jump on that, because I think the second point that you made is more important than the first. I don't think there's a problem with getting the plays in time. The Cowboys haven't really seen many, issues where they're scrambling to get a playoff, and some things that we've seen when in years past, because, there was a stretch for a couple years where they had an issue getting plays in with Romo, and we were getting the delay of games and having to call timeouts. That's not so much the issue. My thing is, when a play doesn't work or when he doesn't like something that's going on, the fact that there's an intermediary between the guy that calls the plays and the guy who runs the plays, Dak Prescott has to turn around and say, hey, Kellen, I really didn't like this and this. And then Kellen has to go and relay that to Scott Linehan. There's stuff that gets lost in translation all of the time in every situation. You'll be on Twitter and you can say something that is the most direct, 100% no equivocation about it, and people will still get confused. One-to-one. But you're talking about putting somebody in the middle of the guy playing calls on the guy that has to run them. That's just asinine. Oh, sorry. I can say asinine. That's just asinine.
That's just asinine.
And the thing the thing that pisses me off the most about having to assign, having Kellen Moore even on the team to assign a catch this fade to, is that Jason Garrett let it happen. Jason Garrett, are you tuned in this year? Do you even care anymore? Were you so resigned at what happened last season that you just kind of threw your hands up and said, screw it? I was going to say the other word, too. Are you just saying screw it right now, Jason Garrett? Because it certainly feels like you're kind of just putting on a season and waiting to get fired. I don't know about you, and I hear everybody's argument. Yes, of course Jason Garrett is involved in the play calling. Of course people were asking for Jason Garrett to have the play calling duties removed from him. That's what Jerry Jones did. He thought that as the head coach of the team, his time was a little bit, what's the best word? His time was too divided between being the play caller and the designer of the offense and also having head coach duties. That was like 12,000 years ago. If you ain't improved to the point that you can now resume to, making play calls and improved, especially based off of what you're seeing in the moment, then, bro, you don't deserve to be a head coach. I don't even think that you're tuned in to the point that you want to be on the sideline anymore. And maybe I'm just being crazy. I'm not saying that he doesn't want to win. He wants to win these games. He wants to be a successful head coach. But with all of the drama that comes along with being the coach of the Dallas Cowboys, he's now been doing this. This is year number 8. Most coaches don't last that long for a reason. Even successful coaches that have won in the league, going on and had multiple playoff victories in the same year, get burnt out sooner or later. It's not completely out of the question for Jason Garrett. He has the stress level of 10,000 coaches being the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. It's not out of the question that he's burnt out. And that's the reason why we're seeing them not being able to make any adjustments. But before that even happened, what the hell was that offseason? Y'all let Scott Linehan take control of the offense? Are you serious? You let him and a power struggle between them? Why is there a power struggle? You're an offensive-minded head coach. There should be no power struggle amongst your lieutenants. Kick them all to the curb. Get rid of all of them. There was nothing that said you should have brought back any of these coaches from the 2017 season, but you did. You brought back Linehan, and you fired all of his lieutenants. But guess what? The new lieutenants are still taking direction from the guy who doesn't know what he's doing. And you're letting that happen. And you're letting them ruin your reputation, or whatever little reputation you had left, of somebody that could have this team under control. The one thing that everybody has always said about Jason Garrett is that his teams try hard and they're mentally tough. Was there a mentally tough team on the field in Seattle on Sunday?
No, that was actually the first time in recent memory that I can recall the Cowboys players looking like they mailed it in.
Exactly. And now you're having receivers talk. Now Allen Hurns is new to the environment. He's new to the culture. Maybe you were just, you know, clutching at straws to bring him in or whatever. But now he's talking about wanting to get the ball more. That's not stuff that happens under Jason Garrett. So I have to wonder if all of these mistakes, I mean, we've never seen, and it's just one game, you've never seen Ezekiel Elliott put in a performance like that. Is he concentrating? Because he certainly didn't seem to be concentrating in that game. You have receivers now barking. And you made the decision in the offseason to hire Paul Alexander as your offensive line coach. And you brought in yet another tight end coach because everybody abandoned. Bruh, Jason Witten knew what he was doing. You hear him on ESPN.
Oh, yeah.
He's not good. He's not good. Oh, he couldn't have believed that he was really going to be great at this broadcasting job the way that he's performing. He jumped ship. Man. Jason Witten jumped ship.
Yes, sir. What did I say? What did we talk about? We talked about it after it happened, shortly after it happened. We talked about it several times over the course of these episodes. And one point that we've both been strong on is that Witten blindsided the team. And yes. My take on it is simply he saw what happened with Romo. He saw what happened with Dez. And he was just like, you know what? I'm out of here. I'm leaving on my own terms.
He saw that first round draft pick be a linebacker. And he was like, man, screw you guys. I'm going home. Yeah.
Gone. It ruined our Infinity War viewing and everything.
Yeah. Oh, man, listen.
Oh, man, listen. Never forgive you for that, Jason. Love you to death, please. You got to time that up better, man. We were watching Infinity War when Okay, but and the thing, Jason Garrett, what's crazy about it is you're catching this fade, and we don't even want to have to give you this fade because I believe – that he's a good head coach. I do believe he's a good head coach. I don't believe he understands how the power structure is supposed to work within a team. And I've spoken this several times, the dysfunctional relationship between him and Scott Linehan. And for those that have asked me, well, Pat, what are you referencing? Well, this is what I'm referencing. Back in 2005, Scott Linehan was the offensive coordinator of the Miami Dolphins. And Linehan hired Jason Garrett as the Dolphins quarterback coach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So for all intents and purposes, Jason Garrett feels continually indebted to Scott mm-hmm. Linehan for giving him his first shot as an NFL coach, albeit an assistant at the time. And that's one of the reasons that when it came time for Jason Garrett to move back off of the offensive play calling and look for a coordinator, who else would he reach out to but his mentor who just happened to need a job as well? Okay, great, fine. If it works, you're a genius. If not, abandon ship. The problem is you no longer have Romo masking the plays. You no longer have the shock value of 2016 that came when the league didn't know what to do with a Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott combination. Okay, your offensive line is not what it was when you came over, Linehan. You have not made any adjustments whatsoever. And everybody's like, oh, well, it's Garrett's playbook. You're correct. It's Garrett's playbook. But there are more than 8 plays on Garrett's playbook. So miss me with that. That's just stop it. Okay. Just stop it. That'd be, Katie, like me giving you a Thanksgiving meal and you focus only on the cranberry sauce. Like there's a whole table full of good food and you're only looking at the cranberry sauce. But anyway, so Garrett, my thing is Linehan is going to be your downfall. But the reason you got to catch this fade is because you're allowing it to happen. And Katie, you make an excellent point. I think that Jason Garrett himself, for all of what we hear in the media and for all of what we hear from the fans, you know, it's been, you know, almost a decade and he's still here and it's time to go. We're tired of him. I think he's tired of y'all too.
Yeah, he is.
I think he's tired of y'all.
Look, I'm blasting Jason Garrett and I'm tired of those fans. So, I mean, I know he is.
And people, it goes deeper than because you mentioned that, you know, the past 8 years. Right. But it goes deeper than that, because he's been with the Cowboys since 2007 as the offensive mm-hmm. coordinator. Yep. OK, so let's say that's 11 or 12 years overall. But then even before then, obviously, he was the backup quarterback for the Cowboys from, I believe, 92 to 99. OK, so that's 7-8 years right there. Dude, that's almost 20 years with this organization between being a player and a coach. That is almost 2 decades, I think. To your point, KD, I am 100% with you on this. I think that Jason Garrett is mentally tired. He's burning out, which is probably why I think maybe Stephen Jones and Jerry Jones approached him and had Scott Linehan there, and they had like a roundtable meeting this offseason, and they were trying to convince Garrett to you know, Linehan kind of revamped the offense and the assistant coaching staff, how he saw fit. And Garrett was just like, yeah, man, whatever you want to do.
Screw you guys, I'm going home.
Yeah, like whatever you want to do. I think we're watching a man who can be a really good head coach in the NFL.
Yes.
Just wear down mentally. Almost 20 years with this organization. That's almost 20 years of Jerry Jones. That's almost 20 years of Stephen Jones.
Bruh.
And a lot of you fans, you can't take two press conferences of Jerry Jones before you start pulling your hair out. This guy is in meetings every day. Nearly 20 years as either a player or a coach. And I just think at the end of the day, yes, Jason Garrett, you're going to catch this fade, not because you're not a good coach, but because you are allowing others to negatively impact your credibility and the win-loss total on this team simply because you might be exhausted. So what I want you to do is I want you to have a seat. And I want you to talk to your beautiful wife. And I want you to ask her this one question. And you guys have a good conversation and riddle yourself this. Is it time for a fresh start for Jason Garrett?
Mm-hmm.
I think the answer is yes, KD.
But
until you get that fresh start, you're going to catch this fade, bro.
Fade, son. Listen, you're here.
Wells got it. Go ahead. No, plug it. Plug it before.
No, I was about to say that the people are here rocking with the Cowboys Barbershop Catch This Fade podcast. Make sure that you're subscribing on iTunes. We normally don't go scorched earth, but this is a scorched earth occasion. We've seen two of the worst performances. I mean, when you see the breakdown of the Cowboys offense on Twitter and everybody weighing in, I mean, not just Cowboys analysts, national analysts, like, what are y'all doing out here? You don't look like an NFL offense right now. You know it's time for there to be a shakeup. The question is the front office even capable of doing that?
And you know what? I think they're capable of doing it. The question is, do they want to do it? And I don't think that they want to do it outside of a capacity that would keep their current power structure in place. And that's why I got to turn my bullseye in my crosshairs right on Stephen Jones.
Get him.
Stephen Jones, we need to talk, okay? For years, over a decade, your father was vilified when he bought the team, in 1989, and he ended the Landry regime. Now, take all the fields away, and we know that Landry is a god in his own right, as are Gil Brandt, hopefully future Hall of Famer, hopefully 2019 inductee, as was Tex Schramm, okay? But the organization was hemorrhaging about $1 million per year when Jerry Jones took over it. They had several losing seasons, and Schramm let Jones take the heat for getting rid of Landry, okay? Your dad stepped in front of a train to get this organization and, in short order, turned it around from 1-15 first season, went out, grabbed Troy Aikman with the first overall pick, made some moves, got Emmitt Smith, you know, and Michael Irvin, everything from that, those trade pieces that came from the Herschel Walker move with the Minnesota Vikings. He was wheeling and dealing. Got us ring 3, 4, and 5. Things didn't go so well post Aikman, or I should say post Jimmy Johnson, but we'll give Barry Switzer some credit for driving Jimmy's car. Okay. And everybody started to wonder what's going on with the Cowboys. Okay. Well, what happened with the Cowboys was the salary cap, and Jerry Jones didn't know how to manage the salary cap. All right. He was winning when he got to throw a bunch of money at everybody, but when the math had to come in, no more Super Bowls. So everybody's like, well, stop overpaying these old players and bringing them in. And, oh, it's time for just give the keys to Steven. Ladies and gentlemen, you got Steven. This is what you asked for. This is what you got. Now, Mr. Jones, the junior Jones, not the elder Jones, the junior Jones, you got to do better. I am a fan of your frugality and you being able to balance a checkbook like nobody's business. Okay. But I don't understand why you permit certain things to occur in the organization and specifically on the field. We talked about Dak Prescott, right? Dak Prescott had to catch the fade, correct? You know, one of the main reasons, because we talked about Kellen Moore as well, but one of the main reasons that Dak Prescott is not succeeding is because it goes up the chain where we hear Jerry Jones saying the right things. He wants Dak out there wheeling and dealing. Use your legs, use your wheels, make plays, do things that you did at Mississippi State. And then immediately after Jerry says it, what does Steven come in and do? Steven says he doesn't want to, quote unquote, expose his quarterback. He's not a fan of having his quarterback run 5 and 6 times a game. I don't know, Steven, who you think your quarterback is, but I can tell you who he isn't. He isn't one who's going to win from the pocket. You need to let him play football. And I don't mean the Drew Brees football. I mean the schoolyard. Go out there, read a defense, and say, you know what? Here's the play. And if this breaks down, then I'm running for, 30 yards. That's who Dak Prescott needs to be. Right now, for all the good that Stephen Jones has done, especially with, in combination or in concert with Will McClay, as far as personnel moves, and, they've obviously had their whiffs in free agency, but they've had some great values that they found in free agency as well. But right now, in the 1-2 season, speaking from late September, Stephen Jones, you got to catch the fade because you're no longer a part of the solution. Now you are, in fact, a part of the problem. So I'm just going to go ahead and say that until this ship gets righted, I need you to step aside for a moment. Give me the wheeling and dealing Jerry Jones, the one who's willing to call Dez back and say, I'm sorry. The one who's willing to call Jason Witten back and say, hey, what can we do to get you out of that booth? Because, you don't really sound good in there, but you can still kind of produce on the field, maybe. Or the Jerry Jones that says, you know what? Let's just package some late trade pieces and go get a tight end that's worth a damn. Whatever the case may be. I need 1992 Jerry Jones. That's what I need. I'm not talking about, for free agency next year, because I need Steven back for free agency next year. But for riding the ship right now in 2018, I need that Jerry Jones back. And until that happens, I think we're going to see more problems. Hell, you mentioned you got Allen Hurns out there griping. This is only his fourth game he's going into. He's already griping. We just saw today on Twitter, Cole Beasley doesn't sound thrilled at the moment about the thought of, returning. In his words, he said it's not up to him. And, to a degree it's not, but that's a weird statement to make considering it is kind of up to you as well because you have to sign the contract. And then somebody said to him, well, he's going to give up on the Cowboys like he did before, alluding to when he almost gave up on football and, they talked him into staying. And his statement was unequivocally, I'm going to play somewhere next year, no matter where that may be.
Right.
Fix it. Listen.
We know that the Cowboys have rabbit ears. We're on Twitter. We know that Cowboys players search their names. They don't just wait to be tagged. They actually go out and seek what people are talking about. And maybe that's a trend around the entire NFL. I don't follow a lot of players outside of the Cowboys organization. But more than I can even fathom, Cowboys players are super sensitive to what they're hearing. So everybody talking bad about this offense and piling on the lack of creativity, obviously they see it in practice and they know what's happening when they're being asked on 3rd and 9 to run to the sticks and turn around and wait for the pass and not really run creative routes in order to get them open. We've talked about Scott Linehan at length last week when he caught this fade along with Sean Lee. Both of them still deserve to catch another fade, but we're running short on them. But we know that the Cowboys have rabbit ears. So that all of this conversation that all of us are having, they're all absorbing it. And you're starting to see the cracks. You're starting to see the things that only come out in a poorly run organization that's struggling right now. And for me, that means Stephen Jones and Jerry Jones, both of them. I understand what you're saying about the fact that we want Willen and Dylan. Jerry, I don't know if there's anything that's going to solve this team except for the people that are here right now. I used to be all gung-ho about getting Earl Thomas. Why would Earl Thomas want to come here right now? He ain't coming here right now. So right. I'm not even worried about them going out and getting more players, better players. That ship sailed. in-season acquisitions, unless you're getting somebody at the level of Earl Thomas, in-season acquisitions don't even work. They missed the boat. They wanted to be prudent with their salary cap, even though they're right now sitting on a bunch of space and have more space than they could have had. They decided they were going to be prudent.
You have failed this city.
And so in my estimation, it's both Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones that have to catch this fade. And look, you know, I'm tired of giving a fade to everybody, bro. I'm just tired. Everybody, the whole damn team got to catch this fade, man.
Oh, man. You know what? And what's crazy is, KD, is, you know, we laugh while we're doing this, but we're laughing to keep from hurting. You know what I mean? We're laughing to keep from hurting. These are this is laughter that's pretty much a protection mechanism, like a self-preservation mechanism, psychologically speaking. And at the end of the day, all we want nice things,
man. That's it.
We just want nice things, but what we're not going to do, what we're never going to do, is lean one way or another. So when we're getting those nice things, or when we're getting a mixed bag, we will, like we led the show off with, we gave praise to DeMarcus Lawrence. We gave huge praise to Byron Jones. There are people that are players that are doing very well. Look at Vander Esch. He's starting to break out quickly. There's a lot of positive that's happening on this team. But when you go out and you put something on film like what we saw in week 3, which is actually worse than what we saw only 2 weeks prior, we got to take the gloves off, and you got to catch it. You got to catch it, because that's, you know, you're not going to improve if we sit here and toe the company line and, you know, say, oh, well, it's going to get better. It doesn't look like it's going. Excuse me. It doesn't look like it's going to get better right now. And it might, and hopefully it will. But as we have this conversation right now, I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, the most frustrating part is that everybody chalked up week one's performance to the team not really being present during the preseason, shaking off rust, all of those sorts of things. That's what we use to excuse their performance in week one. To come back in week 3 after the way that they played against the Giants in week 2 and have that same performance is unacceptable. And they deserve every single bump, nick, bruise, empty passion that they're catching this fade with. The barber is going to screw y'all up because of the way that y'all screwed up on the field.
I hope you get you, fam.
Listen. The joint and barbershop, when homeboy shaved off the top of homie's head, that's what the entire Cowboys offense needs right now. So they all got to catch this fade. The whole organization got to catch this fade. I'm KD Drummond. That's my man, Patrick Walker. Find him on Twitter at Voice of the Star. Find me at KD Drummond NFL. That's it, man. I'm tired of talking about this.
Real quick, and before we go, whatever you do, okay, don't make this worse on yourself by us having to come back next week and throw more fade, because we don't want to do it, but we will do it. So all this talk about going out there and slinging the ball against the Detroit Lions, the number one ranked passing defense in the league, that is also the 32nd ranked rushing defense in the league, stop. Stop overthinking. Stop being so smart that you're dumb, as my late grandmother used to say. And with that, I don't have nothing else to say, man. I'm dropping my mic, man.
You know what it is. Salute.
Tag team off the rope.
Be like this. Be like this. Somebody should have told me it would be like this. Yeah. Life is a balance. You lose your grip, you could slip into an abyss. No doubt. You see these tripping. Ego in charge of every move, he's a star. And we can't look away due to the days that he caught our hearts. He's falling apart, but we deny it. Justifying a half-ass drop, we always buy it. When he tell us he a genius, but it's clearer lately. It's been hard for him to look into the mirror lately. There was a time when this was my hero, maybe. That's the reason why his fall from grace is hard to take. Cause I believed him when he said it was pure, ain't he? The type of nigga swear he real, but all around us fake. The women, the as you know, the yes men, nobody with the balls to say something to contest them. So he grows out of control until the person that he truly was all along is starting to show. Damn, wonder what happened. Maybe it's my fault for idolizing. It's based off the words they be rapping.